Vážený pane ministře.
Distinguished Minister Schleicher. Distinguished Professor Stech. Distinguished Member of the Parliament. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, allow me to welcome you most cordially on behalf of the Ministry of Education, Youth and Sports to today's seminar dedicated to the teaching profession in today's world. Challenges, threats, and ways of tackling them. It's a sufficiently dramatic title, and I'm sure that today will be beneficial and enjoyable, so I look forward to not only to the keynote, but to the discussion that will follow. We've started our preparation of the strategy of the Education Policy 2030 Plus, and on this occasion I'd like to inform you that the external expert group that we've already introduced works on the individual priorities. This was already made public at the National Technical Library. There are seminars ongoing. By the end of June, more than 10 will have been held. Besides that, the Minister has started going to the regions in order to hold open discussions with headmasters and teachers. And also today's seminar, to which you've come, is part of this initiative of the Ministry of Education to openly communicate matters related to the education policy. However, today the national dimension will have an international element. It is a great pleasure that thanks to our membership in OECD, we can welcome Andreas Schleicher here, that he could come to the Czech Republic. I would like to thank the Minister for initiating this event, and I'd like to thank Ambassador Mr. Gandalovic for taking part in this seminar. I presume that we agree that teachers are the key building block of any education system, and the perception of the teachers and their satisfaction and well-being is reflected in the quality of the work they do and also in the efficiency with which pupils acquire knowledge that teachers strive to convey to them. And then, in effect, then this is also reflected in the international surveys in which the Czech Republic participates. Supporting teachers, therefore, is one of the key priorities not only of the ministry but public administration as such. Besides the necessary remuneration, which has been improving quite significantly over the past 3 years, we need to focus our support also on other areas that provide the prerequisite for adequate performance of teaching work. So, for instance, adequate workload, the burnout syndrome recently. A paper has been published on that topic, reflecting the situation at one of the Czech universities. We also need to take a look at the fact why teachers, both young and old, want to leave the profession after a certain period of time. And another challenge is a shortage of qualified teachers, and also the question of how to enhance the attractiveness of the teaching profession. We'd like to discuss these topics, and not only them, at today's seminar. I do hope that besides providing the national perspective, we'll also have a very interesting international comparison of how these issues are addressed elsewhere. I would like to point out one thing, and that is that this seminar is being video recorded. I do hope that you agree with this recording so that other experts and other people interested in this matter can have access to it. Without any further ado, however, let me now hand over to the Minister of Education, Youth and Sports, Robert Plaga, who will introduce the main challenges encountered by teachers and steps undertaken by the Ministry to address them. I would like to briefly introduce the Minister. The Minister graduated from the Faculty of Economics at the Mandel University in Brno. He subsequently worked there and lectured there between 2012 and 2013. Between 2013 and 2015, he was director of the Technologies Transfer Center. Then in 2015, he was Deputy Minister of Education for managing the higher education section, science and research. And since the 13th of December 2017, he has been holding the post of Minister of Education, Youth and Sports. Mr. Minister, the floor is yours. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, it is my pleasure and my honor, in the first place, to be able to welcome distinguished guests here. In the first place, Mr. Andreas Schleicher from OECD, and also my predecessor, Professor Stanislav Stech. Even though I won't really give you any new insight in my remarks, I believe it's still vital to remind ourselves of the fact that the teaching profession is the building block. This indeed is the key to knowledge economy, and this holds true everywhere around the world. We may argue which country would be our role model, which country is successful or not, and there are discussions ongoing of whether you should have 10 or 12 maths lessons, or whether technology should be taught more in schools, etc. But all of these are partial debates. If you would look at the successful economies, they have the highest quality teachers for several reasons, that it's an attractive and prestigious job. However, we are not in that situation in the Czech Republic. Introductory proclamation is political. However, I believe it's vital to reiterate that for a long period of time, sufficient money was not spent on the education system. And I feel, even though it's not pleasant in my position, for instance, in the Chamber of Deputies, that basically everybody is interested in that, which is, however, the first positive signal, because to realize the significance of the theme is the first step to remedying the problem of the situation. Such a remedy can't be finished by 2021, even though the government continues in line with the manifesto, and we're serious about changes. However, there has to be a continuation for one simple reason, and that is that the key of the whole education system are high-quality teachers, and conditions for them are created by the state. And this brings me to one very important aspect, and that is that often the debate, and this is also my fault very often, is about finance. I have to say that the conditions are not just the financial conditions, the wage conditions. However, the role of the state is also to create other conditions for the teaching profession, that is, contribute to the well-being of teachers so that teachers provide maximum performance. The second main aspect is unchallengeable is that as the world dynamically develops, also the demands posed on teachers develop, not just demands posed on students. On average, people change their job 6 times during their career. We don't want teachers to do so. They need to get adapted to the changing world as a result. So it's vital for them to have sufficient space, also time-wise, and sufficient support for lifelong learning. Even though this may sound as a cliche, it's not. So we have to have well-motivated teachers, teachers who have support from the society, they are appreciated by society, they are the key persons who are the decisive factor in the future success of society. Why are data and findings of OECD so vital? If you would look at the surveys performed by OECDs and Naturally, we all want evidence-based policies based on data. It's essential to have international comparisons in all these areas. It's not a solution as yet. It's only the source for comparing all the data that we have from the Czech Republic, then we have the international comparisons, and we have to be able to reflect them in policy documents. And well, even though I could be boasting about, for instance, the fact that we're drawing up Strategy 2030 Plus, however, many of these issues have also been reflected in the 2020 strategy. We therefore need to ask, why are they not implemented? We have to ask politicians, and together we should pose pressure so that it's not swept on the carpet. You should pose that pressure because I have to say that if we have not fair access to education or certain imbalances, we cannot have the go. And well, it's the strategies, the policies describe that something should be happening. However, phase B is missing, that is the implementation phase. We have strategies and policies, however, then we do not have the necessary funding for the proposed measures, which is a challenge. So this is where I see the biggest problems. So it's good that we finally do realize the importance of the teaching profession. The Ministry of Education in recent years, and it already started with my predecessors, has started to take a look at the first part of the problem, that is enhancing the attractiveness of the teaching profession. Currently, and I believe successfully, we're trying to open up the debate more to the public, general and expert public, without mutual trust between the individual stakeholders and the debate, the decentralized structure in the Czech Republic. Without mutual trust, we won't be able to make progress. The Czech nature is to keep challenging everything. It's both an advantage and a disadvantage, I have to say. But this is not just an issue faced by Czech society. It's a problem elsewhere as well. However, I believe that in this context, today's seminar is very important because we can take a look at international surveys, the results that it's not just the Czech Republic that is facing these problems, and that international data is something that we can use as basically as a start, as a basis for further steps, so that we can implement things in practice. And would be pleased if education is not a political theme, because naturally there can be very many political arguments about various aspects. It would be my wish that we manage to really minimize the political aspect of education in the main areas. So let's discuss what the system should look like, how to earmark the funding, etc. But if we challenge the whole nature of the system, etc., that it is the teachers that decide the quality and success of education. And if we challenge that, we won't be able to make a progress. Thank you very much for your attention.
Let me thank you very much, Mr. Minister, for your introductory speech. And right now, I would like to present the keynote speaker, Mr. Andreas Schleicher. I've already mentioned that he represents the OECD at this seminar, and in general, I think that the Czech Republic is a very proud member of the OECD. I think that OECD is one of the international organizations that our traditional country, it means one of the traditional countries, and the contribution for the membership is quite big. And this applies also for the education. It is a very good example of the OECD involvement, how OECD can help formulate and enhance the national policy in the field of education. To start with, I would like to say that various surveys and comparisons of the member country, be it through the PISA or PIAC and Education at Glance in particular, show how learning and teaching occurs in various countries, be it through various questions of TALIS, ITEL and others, PISA as well, obviously. But also new instruments are being created in the field of education, one of them being well-being for teachers survey, that is to check to what extent the teacher's satisfaction impacts on the outcomes of the teaching, etc. Education and OECD is linked together through one particular person that we are very proud to welcome in Prague today, namely Mr. Andreas Schleicher, who is the Director for Education and Skills OECD, and he's also a special advisor of education policy to the Secretary General of the OECD. Well, besides mapping data and policies of member countries, he also is involved in the PISA, then PIACS, OECD Strategy of Skills, then TALIS, as I've mentioned, and last but not least, he's also responsible for the INES program. It means the Program of Development Analysis and Mutual Comparisons of the Educational System Performance. And he also is hugely involved in the International Association for the Evaluation of Education. He studied in Germany, physics, and in Australia, and he graduated in maths and statistics. He is also the laureate of the Theodor Hoss Award, and he is a very good example of engagement, democratic engagement. He's a professor of honor in Heidelberg University. And he also is very much involved in the creation of the good education. And he also said that it is in his world famous book, World Class, where he wrote that the smartest children should be compulsory reading for the children. Yeah, this book, sorry, Mr. Schleicher, you have the floor.
First of all, my apologies for doing my presentation in English, but you've got the translation. Then I want to thank Minister Plaga for inviting me to what I feel is a very special moment in the Czech Republic, where teaching is not just becoming financially more attractive, but where there is great investment in making teaching intellectually more attractive. Everybody says the quality of education can never exceed the quality of teachers. That's easy to say, but then how do we pay our teachers compared with other highly skilled people? No? And would you like your own child to become a teacher, not somebody else's child, no? Rather than a lawyer or economist? No? What careers do we offer to our teachers? No? Do we attract the best and brightest minds into teaching? And not just those who choose a specific teacher education program and march through specific pathways. Those are the real questions. And we need to also take into account that we live in a rapidly changing world. And that's one of the things that we do at the OECD. We track the learning outcomes of education systems over time. And I want to start with science because I know attracting science teachers is particularly hard in your country and in actually many other countries as well. And we started this in the year 2006. 2006 is a very long time ago for many of us. Very hard to remember. It was the year before the iPhone was invented. Twitter was still a sound in those years. The Amazon's still a river. But when you actually think about education, the capacity of students to think like a scientist, not just to remember scientific facts and numbers, but to think like a scientist. Not much change, really, in the Czech Republic and many other countries as well. And the world didn't stop in the year 2009. Remember, that was the year when maps became dynamic, Google Maps. No, cars became electric. Started to drive us out a driver. No. But once again, the capacity of our education systems to respond to those changes has been very limited. No. The world is changing. Education is trying to catch up. No. And just think about the last 3 years. You know, robotics, cloud computing, biogenetics, big data, cloud computing, huge changes in the world around us. But once again, education is standing still. And I'm not just talking about the Czech Republic. That's almost a global trend in the industrialized world, no? There are very few exceptions to this. Now, you can look, for example, to a country like Poland. No? Who would have thought in 2006 that the poor cousin in Europe catch up with the Czech Republic and many other countries. No? Consistently moving forward. Or we can look, you know, to Asia, Singapore moving from good to great, and some regions in China I can no longer put on this map here. No? We can no longer see them because they just keep moving forward. No? So it's hard. The majority of countries are not seeing the level of progress that we need to see, but some countries make it. And I think those are the countries that we should be looking to. Show us that change is possible, and that change has a lot to do with teaching. The first thing, of course, we think about is money, obviously. And you can see, if you're a poor country, money makes a difference. But you know, and the Czech Republic is certainly not one of the countries that invests a lot in education. You're sort of a bit on the low end of this line. And that has a lot to do with teacher pay. But actually, if you look to the right side, more money doesn't guarantee you better outcomes. It's actually one of the bitter lessons that we see, that actually beyond the point where the Czech Republic is investing, more money alone is not associated necessarily with better outcomes. It's about thinking very hard about how the investments should be made. And the same is true with time. You know, we looked at in PISA at the time that students spend in school, that's the blue bar, and the time that students spend learning out of school, that's the yellow bar, and you can see it varies hugely across countries. The United Arab Emirates wins that. Students spend 60 hours per week learning in school, out of school. When I look at Finland, it's only a little bit more than half than that. 35 hours. But when you look at productivity, you can see that in countries like Finland or Germany or Switzerland or Japan, students learn a lot in very little time. Whereas in the United Arab Emirates, they spend a lot of time and learn very little. So once again, it's not about having students spend more time in school. It's about improving the learning environments. And that has to do with the quality of teaching. Now, easy to say, really, really hard to do. Education is hard to change. The status quo has always many protectors. And sometimes, you know, we as parents are part of the problem, not part of the solution. We get very anxious when our children no longer learn things that were terribly important for us. And we get even more anxious when our children learn things that we did not learn. So parents try to hold things back. Teachers are sometimes more likely to teach how they were taught than how they were taught to teach. And as a minister of education, you can lose an election over education, but you never win one over education because it takes so much time to translate better ideas into better outcomes. Changing education is really, really hard. That's, I think, something that we need to keep in mind. There are huge asymmetries. Now, if we want to make change, we have to invest resources, time, effort now. And we're going to see the consequences much, much later. The winners of change are many. but their wins are small, and they often don't stand up for them. Parents are very happy when you improve their child's learning, but they're not going to go out on the street. But those who perceive themselves to be losing from this, they're going to be very, very vocal. Those kinds of dynamics are really, really hard to address. But we need to do this. And there are several things that we have seen across countries. The first is, you know, it's very easy to sort people, and it's very hard to improve people. But the most advanced education systems have become very, very good in educating all children. The 10% most disadvantaged students in the province of Shanghai in China do better in mathematics than the 10% wealthiest students in the United States. That shows us poverty need not be destiny. Every student can succeed. If we do believe that every student can learn, and if we provide the condition for every student to learn well. Second challenge. In the past, you know, it was easy to teach students something. Today, the test of truth is not do you remember something that you learned in school, but do you have the level, the kind of compass and navigation tools to find your own way in a world that is increasingly complex, volatile, ambiguous. That makes teaching much, much harder. Teaching is no longer about routine cognitive skills. In fact, the kind of things that are easy to teach, easy to test, are precisely the kind of things that are disappearing from our labor markets. Because those things are also easy to digitize, to automate, to outsource. The future is with complex ways of thinking, complex ways of working. That makes teaching a very, very different profession. That also means the kind of industrial model to teaching. Everybody is educated in the same way, walks in the same way, goes to the same conditions, progresses in the same way. That's the factory worker model that is no longer adequate in the times that we live. It's about creating diverse careers, interesting careers, intellectually attractive careers. And that is the challenge of our times. And that means, you know, changing work organization from structures that are tailoristic, hierarchical, to ones that are flat, collegial, that are predicated on professional collaboration. One of the things that really strikes me about the Czech Republic is how little time teachers spend to work with each other, to engage with other schools. Teaching is very much an isolated profession. And that's something that is paramount to change in the profession. You know, if you are a scientist, you know, I'm a scientist by background. My background is physics. You know what your colleagues are doing, not just in your own country, anywhere in the world. You work with them, and you progress with them. You feel professional ownership. And I don't think we have that in the teaching profession. And that has also to do with accountability. And I mentioned in the past was primarily vertically. You know, you talk to your superior. In the future, it is more lateral. You talk to your neighbor. You talk to the other school. You know how other schools are succeeding. Now, those are the kind of transitions I want to talk about today. And I start with the first one, you know, moving from just educating a few well to having everybody succeed. And I'm coming once more, and it's the last time back to the PISA study. Now, one of the things that we did once is to order learning outcomes by decile of social background. And here you can see in the Dominican Republic, these are the poorest kids, the wealthiest kids, and you can see there's a huge performance gap. And many people say, well, that's normal. You know, children from wealthier background do well, and children from poor background don't do so well. What's the surprise? But actually, when you look at this across countries, you can see how different the picture looks in different education systems. Look, you know, the poorest kids in Vietnam or Estonia do as well as the average child in the Czech Republic. Or, you know, the neighbor Hong Kong. Hong Kong has many poor kids, but they do well in school. I think those kind of data should encourage us to look harder how we can create the conditions for every child to succeed. And you can see that often reflected in the mindset of students. When we once ask students, what do you think makes you successful in mathematics? You had the majority of students in the Czech Republic saying, That's about talent. If I'm not born as a genius, I'm going to study something else. Message being teachers have told them, well, you know, you either can do this or you can't. Or the system, the society has told them that. Sorting them into different pathways. If you ask that same question to a student in Singapore or China, you have 9 out of 10 students who tell you, if I study really, really hard, I trust my teacher is going to help me and I'm going to be successful. And as you can see on the chart, they do succeed. That's the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And it takes the growth mindset to overcome social adversity. And it has to do with how we invest our resources. Look at this. In the Czech Republic, but most other OECD countries as well, we make classes smaller for students in disadvantage. And we make them bigger for students in wealthier communities. And you say, well, that's fantastic. That means we are providing equitable resources. Now, we invest more teachers to the students who need it most. But that's just on the surface. If you scratch the surface, you find this. If you are in a disadvantaged community or in a rural community, you have the worst teachers, the less qualified teachers. If you are in a privileged school or community, you get the more qualified teachers. So yes, on the surface, we put more resources to the poor kids, but in reality, we put the less qualified teachers to the poor kids. And again, it's the quality of teachers, not the quantity of teachers, who influences the outcomes that we see. And that's hard to change. It's easy to say, I give you more money if you're a poor school. Or I give you more money if you're a rural school. It's very, very hard to make it intellectually attractive for the best teachers to go to the toughest environments. But we succeed in other areas. If you look to the Czech Republic, your best surgeons in the hospitals, they don't want to do the standard operations. They want to do the most difficult operations. Because we support them well. We give them the conditions to succeed. We give them all the instruments and the support they need to do their job really well. And that's why the most able people do the most difficult tasks. And teaching, we don't invest so much in this. But there are exceptions to this. If you go to Vietnam, for example, you always find the best teachers in the most difficult schools. Why? They're not actually paid more. But they build interesting careers around challenges. If you're a vice principal in a high-performing school, and one day you say to yourself, I really would like to become a principal, the education ministry will tell them, that's a great aspiration. But you know, first help us turn around one of the lowest performing schools. Show that you can change things. And in the same way, they get the best teachers in the most difficult schools. And they advance in their careers. They have multiple stages in the careers of teachers. Something that I know the Czech Republic is debating, and which I personally believe is very, very important for success, to offer teachers genuine teacher careers. And that's how it works. In Vietnam or China, if you want to get into a higher stage of your career, it's not about serving longer. It's about being willing and able to change the conditions in one of the most difficult environments. Those are the countries that have reverted this chart. But it's difficult to do, I admit that. Let me come to what I believe is perhaps the toughest challenge. It's about changing the instructional paradigm. Getting from students just, remembering things to actually creating something. That's what the modern education system really is required to do. Let me just give you a few trends on this, global trends. First of all, we are seeing a worldwide rise in the middle class. More people become wealthy. And 9 out of 10 new entrants to the middle class are in 2 countries only, China and India. The future, in a moment you can say in the Czech Republic, the smart kids, the wealthy kids compete with people in Europe. The future is this. Now, there are going to be a lot more wealthy people in the world. You can see that also in absolute numbers. That's one trend. It's going to be harder for people to maintain. But it's also going to be more diversity in classrooms. One of the trends that we observe across the OECD is that that 10% wealthiest people in the OECD area now earn 10 times as much as the 10% lowest earners. That's also something that ends up on the doorsteps of classrooms. No? Teachers will find more and more diverse classrooms. No? That's one of the biggest challenges that teachers face. No? And this is not just about, you know, economic diversity. There are also more people on the move. The global trends of migration make our classrooms also more diverse. And again, it's all ending up on the doorsteps of classrooms. Teachers face that kind of growing diversity of society and need to personalize learning and do whatever it takes to deal with this. Volatility, I like this chart, which comes from the financial world. We save less and spend more. And this can only work up to a point for individuals and for nations. That's also, for me, a symbolic kind of feature of the value we attribute to education. If you are in China, the poorest parents will spend their last money and their last time and effort in the education of their children. That's the future of their country. In Europe, we have already spent the money of the children for our own consumption. That's why we are so heavily indebted. The Czech Republic is actually much better positioned than many countries in Europe, but the trend is the same. We spend more, we save less. We put more on the present and less emphasis on the future, and that's actually why education features so poorly in public accounts. We spend things on many things. Public money is actually quite there, but education doesn't feature as prominently as other things. And then, you know, the elephant in the room is digitalization. We have now more broadband connections in the OECD area than there are people. And that's fueling the rise of artificial intelligence. And this is one of the trends when we come to teaching that we should really take to heart. Artificial intelligence pushes us to think much harder what makes us truly human. How do we complement the artificial intelligence of computers with the human qualities that actually allow us to enable this? I'm going to come back to this because I think it's really, really important. If you think about digitalization, it's been incredibly democratizing. Everybody can contribute, participate in society, and so on. But it's also concentrating power at a rate that we have never seen before. It's incredibly particularizing. The smallest voice can be heard everywhere. You post something on Twitter, and everybody can follow you. But it's also incredibly homogenizing. Squashing individuality, cultural uniqueness. The big questions of our time are not just, you know, knowledge, it's also about identity, getting lost in this digital world. Digitalization is incredibly empowering. You can see that nowhere better than right here in Prague. The people who change the world don't have a big industry, but they have big ideas. The entrepreneurs that are most successful here in Prague have the product before they have the money. That is so different from it used to be even 20 years ago. But technology can be also incredibly disempowering. When we trust our smartphones more than we trust ourselves. We follow the dictates of Google Maps rather than trust our sense of orientation. And I think that is also becoming real. And why do I say this? Because this is all about what teachers find in the classroom. And we find it in the world of work. You know, as I said already, routine tasks are disappearing. Technology intensive tasks are rising, and you put the trends together and you can see the future of work is going to look very, very different from where we see this now. People need to be able to do different things than what they're able to do. And you can also see when we surveyed students that half of 15-year-olds in the Czech Republic say, I feel really, really bad if I'm not connected. And you can see the time that students spend online outside school has got real dimension. You talk about a couple of hours every day. The digital world is becoming the real world for many young people. And when you think about this, you know, again, 10 years ago, you got the world's knowledge at your fingertips as a student. The real world and the digital world became sort of integrated, and suddenly everybody got connected. But that has also made many things harder. When you think about, you know, as a teacher, teaching young people to read used to be very simple. Reading was about extracting knowledge from sources that somebody else had written for you. And when you didn't know the answer to a question, you could look it up in an encyclopedia and you could trust the answer to be true. Today, you look up things on Google and you find 100,000 answers to your question, and nobody tells you what is right and what is wrong, what's true and what is not true. This very construct of literacy has totally changed. Literacy is no longer about extracting knowledge, it's about constructing knowledge. As a teacher, you need to be able to teach young people to navigate ambiguity, manage complexity, not just to read the alphabet. And again, you know, while it's so easy to connect people, now that's the wonderful part of the digital world, actually the students in your classrooms are talking more likely to people who think like them, who look like them, who work like them. Now, that's what Facebook and all these devices do with us. It is much harder now for teachers to help students understand the diversity in classrooms. Those are the real challenges. At the OECD, we have tried to sort of build a framework around this, the future of education and skills, the future of teaching. Knowledge will always remain important. But there is a significant shift from content knowledge to epistemic understanding. Mathematics is no longer about formulas and equations. They're in your smartphone. It's about thinking like a mathematician. It's not about calculating an exponential function. It's about understanding the nature of an exponential function. What does it really tell us? If we would really understand, we would have sent 3,000 doctors to fight the Ebola crisis in Africa rather than 300. It's easy to calculate, hard to understand. It's about thinking like a scientist, not just about knowing lots of things about biology and chemistry, but can you design an experiment? Do you understand the difference between questions that are scientifically investigable and those are not? Thinking like an historian. History, yes, has something to do with names and places and so on, but it has more to do with thinking like an historian. Do you understand how the narrative of a society has emerged, how it developed, how it advanced, and sometimes how it unravels and the context changes? What does it mean for the times in which we live today? Thinking like an historian. Why do I say this? Because those things are much, much harder to teach than following a textbook which gives us mathematical, scientific, or historical content. Teaching is becoming much harder, and it doesn't end with knowledge. This skill dimension, the modern world no longer rewards you just for what you know. Google knows everything. The modern world rewards you for what you can do with what you know. And then the big question of attitudes and values. Sort of we have looked at those things quite in detail. And when it comes to the instructional system to teaching, it means raising cognitive demand, ensuring that all students are actively engaged. Success is also about teaching fewer things at greater depth. We are very good in adding more and more things to our school systems and putting more and more things in the school curriculum. That's easy to do and you make yourself very popular. It is actually really, really hard to take things away and to give teachers more space to teach fewer things at greater depth. But that is the thing that we see in the most successful education systems now. Curriculum in Finland is 40 pages. In Shanghai, 50 pages. Teachers teach fewer things at greater depth. How do we remain true to the disciplines, but at the same time encourage interdisciplinary understanding? How do we focus on things that students can use in other contexts? And how do we remember that some things are caught, not taught? When it comes to values, social emotional skills, we know their importance and they're much harder to build because they're not easily put in a textbook. So let me turn directly to the profession, what it means. In the past, we could tell teachers exactly what to teach and how to teach. In the future, we need to create much more greater ownership of professional practice. In one sense, you can say the Czech Republic is giving its schools more discretion on this than virtually any other country except the Netherlands. If you look at all of the decisions that an education system takes, this is the share of decisions that are taken at the school level. So it's more than 2/3 of the decision that principals and teachers could take in their classroom. And then, you know, compare that with other countries where this is just 10%. So on the one hand, you can say in the Czech Republic there's a lot of space for schools to shape their organization and learning environment. But that's not really what I mean by professional ownership. What I mean by professional ownership is strengthening public confidence in the profession. This is about trust in the profession. And that's easy to say, hard to do. No? You know? You trust your mother, but would you trust your mother to fly a 747? No? Trust has a lot with professional competence. It has a lot to do with transparency in the education system, with openness, with professional collaboration. You generally trust people who you know. No? How do we actually help, you know, communities and teachers to engage? No? Professional preparation and learning. No? Yeah, you think about teacher education, but quite honestly, in many countries, teacher education can be more the problem than the solution of professionalization. In many of the highest performing education, actually the best education doesn't happen in a university for teachers. It happens in the school from the best teachers and the best school leaders. Work very, very close. And it happens on a lifelong, life-wide trajectory, not just before people get into teaching. It has to do with collective ownership of professional practice. And by that I mean that the good ideas don't come from the outside, no? But come from the inside of the profession. No? And it has to do with how do we design the profession. I give you an example. In the Czech Republic, teachers teach. Now that's what you expect them to do. But actually, they have relatively little time to do other things than teaching. No? Much less time than in many other countries. No? Many other countries, teachers spend a much greater share of their time engaging in the development of professional practice and professional understanding and professional knowledge. They are not just recipients of professional knowledge and implementers of this, they are also the designers of professional practice. And I think that's very, very important. When we come to the intellectual attractiveness of the profession, that is very, very much important. And the OECD, you know, like everything, we try to score countries on that. No? So when we talk about teacher professionalism, of course it has to do with teacher knowledge. No? Knowledge about the subject that you teach. No? That's the first thing that your students figure out very, very quickly. Do you really have a deep passion for the subject that you teach? No? But it doesn't end there. It's also about, you know, do you know how students actually learn that subject? And most importantly, do you know your students, each and every of them? No? And that's, again, something, you know, in the Czech Republic, teachers teach a class, and that's sort of how the work of teachers is defined. Many of the highest performing education systems, teachers would spend more time out of the classroom with individual students where they actually really get to know them. I'm going to come back to this. The second dimension is professional autonomy. Now, teachers can make decisions about, you know, their work, designers of innovative practices. And the last thing is about collaborative culture in education. To what extent do teachers work with other teachers, are connected with other teachers? And you can see how countries come out on this. Now, when you actually score and rank them on this, you can see that very much a difference in this. If you look at the Czech Republic, yes, teacher professional autonomy, relatively high. Teachers have a lot of discretion. But on the teacher knowledge, they don't get such a great score. And it's not the disciplinary knowledge. The disciplinary knowledge is quite good. It's mostly the knowledge about the people they work with. Mm-hmm. But also the green bar is small, the collaborative culture. Teachers work too much in isolation in their classroom, so trying to solve difficult problems on themselves. No? And it's actually worse than how it looks. You know, when you look at the green bar, you think, well, it's still not sort of too small. But when you look at this in a little bit more detail, you see this. On the left side, you can see that Czech teachers do actually engage in exchange. They talk to other teachers, they share material, they share resources, and things like this. Now, that is happening to some extent. But when you look at the deeper level of professional collaboration, things like classroom observation. Do I study how other teachers teach my class? joint activities, collaborative professional development, do I learn together with my colleagues in the school and professional learning communities, and so on. These bars are really, really tiny. So you can say overall collaboration doesn't look so bad, but when it comes to the things that really, really matter, there is much to do on this. And that, you know, I'm going to come back to this, and then I want to also show you, you know, you can say, well, maybe it's not so important, but actually what our data show is the more teachers teach jointly as a team, no, the more they observe other teachers' classes and provide feedback, the more they engage in joint activities, the more they take part in professional collaboration, the greater their sense of ownership of the profession, their trust in their own abilities. This deep professional collaboration is very, very important to raise the status of the teaching profession. Let's look at this in the context of resources. You know, often things come back to spending money and resources. On the vertical axis, you see the student-staff ratio. Now, the lower you are, the more generous you are in providing teachers to students. And you can see, actually, the Czech Republic is, I know there's a lot of issues around teacher shortages, but actually, compared with other countries, you have more teachers for every 100 students than many other countries. On the horizontal axis, I show you something else, and that's the size of classes. And there you can see classes in the Czech Republic are smaller than they are on average across OECD countries. And I compare you here with China. On the vertical axis, China and the Czech Republic are exactly the same, or almost exactly the same. Quite generous with the number of teachers you teach. You spend for every 100 students. When it comes to class sizes, classes are small in the Czech Republic and very large in China. And I know you're not going to tell me, well, it's much better to have smaller classes. You know, parents like smaller classes, teachers like smaller classes, and it's a much better kind of nice environment. You can argue that, but actually it comes at a cost. If you don't spend more teachers but make your classes smaller, it means that teachers have less time to do other things than teaching, the kind of things that are so important. Teachers may be getting less well paid, also true. So the small classes in the Czech Republic actually have a high cost. If you are teaching a class in Shanghai in China, you only teach about 11 to 16 hours per week. You spend more, but you work actually 50 hours per week, more than a Czech teacher. You just spend a lot of time doing different things. You spend a lot of time with individual students and their parents. You spend a lot of time with your colleagues. You spend a lot of time on research. If you have an idea, if you're not happy in a Chinese classroom with what happens in your school, you can design an experiment. You can say, actually, go to the government. I know, I think I can do things better. And they will tell you, okay, here's some money, try to show it. You actually conduct an experiment. And if at the end of the year, you'll find out actually your approach works better, the government will not, you know, judge you on this, but they will tell you, okay, show us that it works in 10 other schools with other people in other places. You design a larger experiment. If you succeed, one day you become an experimental school and the system starts to listen to you. That's how people contribute. They also have a digital platform where teachers can share their lesson plans and projects and ideas. So if you develop a very innovative lesson, you can make it available to other teachers. And they combine that with reputational metrics. The more other teachers are going to download your lessons, use your lessons, criticize your lessons, improve your lessons, the more popular you become in the school system. And at the end of the school year, your principal will not only ask you, you know, how well did you teach your own students, but what contribution did you make to the profession? How did you help other teachers grow in their profession? How do the people around you respect you? That's what encourages a level of professional collaboration. And it comes, you know, through those resource allocations. Not about spending more money. It's about thinking about what work organization will help teachers to become the most revered professionals. What career structures? Again, if you go in a Czech hospital, you'll not find that everybody works on the same kind of level. Now, you find some nurses, you find some doctors, you find a chief surgeon, you find a multitude of different professions who collaborate together to help patients. That's what we see also in high-performing systems in education. Now, I know you will tell me, well, maybe, you know, smaller classes are not such a great idea when it comes to, you know, making teaching attractive and making the work of teaching effective. But, you know, teachers are happier in smaller classes. And parents are happier in smaller classes. We tested that. Of course, you know, if I ask teachers, do you like a smaller class better or a bigger class, they would all probably tell me they like the smaller class. But I asked the question differently. I basically asked the teachers, how happy are you with your work? And then I looked at the size of the class they actually teach. And I couldn't find much of a relationship. Now, actually, teacher job satisfaction didn't vary much by the size of the class teachers teach. And now you will ask me, well, if it's not the size of the class, what is it that makes teachers happy or satisfied with their job? And there is a very clear answer to this. Actually, the single biggest predictor for teacher job satisfaction is not the size of the class, not even the salary. It's a degree of professionalization. Remember, professional knowledge, professional autonomy, and the collaborative culture. Those three things together, you know, bring the green bar up, makes you satisfied with your profession, with your work environment. Also, you know, make you believe in yourself as a teacher, teacher self-efficacy. And interestingly, look at the left part. That is our single best predictor for how teachers perceive their own status in society. Think about this. The status of the teaching profession in society is not only a feature of society, it is also a feature of how the work of teachers themselves is organized. And that's something that is actually varying a lot across countries. Now, if you are in Singapore or Korea or in Finland, you can see that most teachers believe that their job is valued by society. They feel appreciated. And surprise, surprise, if you go to Finland, you know, they get 8 applicants for everyone in every post in teacher education. That's a dream in the Czech Republic. Everybody wants to become a teacher. And if you fail to get a place in a teacher education institution, you can still apply for law school or economics. That's something that is to do with this kind of data. And Finnish teachers are not particularly well paid. They're better paid than Czech teachers. That's not very difficult. But they're not particularly well paid compared to the OECD countries. So it's not about money. It's about those conditions that make teaching intellectually attractive. And the same is true for Singapore. Singapore is an amazing career that they offer you. If you become, you know, a teacher, you often start with a bachelor only, but you'll spend a lot of time learning. Most teachers will make their master's and PhD while studying. Most teachers will do internships in either university or the government. No. Actually, the majority of teachers spends about 1 year in government to study policy. They are not just the recipients of policies, they are the contributors of policies. If you're a school principal in Finland, you spend 2/3 of your time in your school and 1/3 of your time in the government, in the municipal government. So the municipal government is not just an institution, you know, with administrators, but most of the people working, they're actually people who are school leaders. They are not, you know, talking, you know, receiving instructions, they're actually building the school system. And you can see that is mirrored in the high level of prestige of the profession. You compare that with the Czech Republic, where the perceived status, and I don't even know whether this is real, this is just what teachers themselves tell us, is very low. Almost as low, the countries where my children go to school is at the very end in France. And again, French teachers are actually quite well paid, so you can't put it simply on the working conditions. It has to do much more with the kind of prestige that we see. And, you know, you can say, well, that's just teachers complaining. Do we need to take that too serious? But actually, it is a very important predictor of the learning outcomes that we see in PISA, where teachers perceive the status of the teaching profession to be better, learning outcomes are higher. And that's, I think, another important lesson that we don't know what the causal nature of that relationship. It can go both ways. And it could be that where the status of teaching is high, you get the best and brightest to become teachers, they do a great job, PISA results will be good. It could also be the other way around. No? Our teachers do a really good job. You know, society will appreciate their work. We don't know from this. But what is clear is that there is a relationship between the status of the teaching profession and ultimately the results that we see. And it has also to do with teacher skills. This is a really interesting slide that I show you from our survey of adult skills. What you see here is the distribution of numeracy scores among degree holders. No? People who have gone, who have achieved a university degree, and we test their numeracy skills, and you can see the variability in this. And you can see actually, you know, Japan comes out very high, Finland comes out very high, but actually the Czech Republic is also coming out really, really high. No? In a way, you can say your university graduates have a great skill set. That's something you can be very proud of. But, you know, what about teachers? Teachers are also university graduates. Well, when we look at their skills, it looks like this. If you are in Japan and Finland, graduates are highly skilled, but teachers are even more highly skilled. And that is because those countries attract the best and brightest into the teaching profession. Everybody wants to become a teacher. If you look at the Czech Republic, your overall graduate population is very strong. But teachers are more at the lower end of the spectrum. Again, it shows us that the teacher education, that the best, you know, high school students do not want to go to teacher education. There's something to work on. And it also has to do with the status of the teaching profession. Changing that distribution is a very important ingredient to make teaching a more attractive profession. Very last, you know, in the past, the past was divided, you know, we track students, we put them into different streams, and, you know, that happens in my country a lot, in Germany, happens in your country a lot. That comes from the industrial age. You know, we only needed a few really well-educated workers and a lot of people with low skills, so divide students up, you know, in academic and vocational schools and so on. But in the future, there needs to be a lot more integration and openness in the education systems. Now, I think we should never level down the horizon of any student because we will need every student in the education system. And that also means we better need to integrate the tools that we have. And I come here to, you know, evaluation and assessment. Often, you know, we think about evaluation as at the end, you know, you're going to get a test. And I know a lot of people, everybody in the Czech Republic pays a lot of attention to the matura, the entrance exam, the school exit exam. But in the future, probably, assessment and testing will take less time away from students and be more an integral part of the learning experiences. That's the last thing, the culture of assessment and evaluation to change from, you know, looking at results at the end and telling students what didn't work to actually giving continual feedback to the learning process to integrate the assessment and the learning culture. Again, last November, I was in Shanghai and visited a primary school, and I took this picture. And this was a class where students were learning calligraphy. And when you think about calligraphy, you know, Chinese kids need to learn 4,000 Chinese characters. It's a lot of work. And you see students drawing, and you don't think about assessment and technology. But, you know, while these students were drawing on the table, under the table, they had a scanner. No? And next to them, they had a tablet, and the tablet was giving them real-time dynamic feedback about the quality of their drawings. This was the use of artificial intelligence in education, where teachers were not giving students feedback, you know, a day later or a week later, marking up things in red, but students, they're interacting, you know, they're getting individual feedback. But it didn't make the teacher less important. It actually made the teacher more important. The teacher had a bigger role. The teacher could suddenly look into what every student was doing, not just a few students. We called in the classroom. And I saw that at the end of the lesson, you know, when the teacher went with me in the neighboring room and said, let's have a look at the results. And the teacher could see actually, you know, here was a student who took 4.5 seconds longer to do something that most students from a similar social demographic background do faster. What can I do specially for this student? Or here were common misconceptions of my students in this lesson that teach me that I must have explained something badly. How can I improve my own teaching? You could see assessment and learning were becoming one, and students were not giving a test that was either too hard for them or too easy with them, but they were just, you know, doing their work well and getting very individualized and personal feedback. Those are things that I think in the future, when it comes to the teacher, we need to take to heart as well. Last but not least, parents. Actually, what our data from PISA say is that students who say their parents are interested in their schoolwork, they're much more ambitious in their schooling, and they're also much happier with their lives. And this was about 15-year-olds. Now, when I think about, you know, my children at age 15, I'm not sure they were so sort of so keen that I was very interested in their schooling. But actually, when we survey students, that's what they tell us. The fact whether parents ask their children, how was school, every day, had a bigger impact on student learning outcomes than parental income. This is about building bridges, building connections between schools and societies. Again, in the school in China, which was actually quite poor school in a rural neighborhood in Shanghai, I went to a teacher and asked her, so how do you engage parents in this? You know, you bring a very high-tech, modern world to these kids. How do you bring people on board? And she said to me, oh, well, you know, I try to call every parent about twice per week. And then I said to her, wow, you know, that must be a huge workload on you, a huge burden on you to do this. And she said, yeah, but, you know, I never actually thought about it like this. If I wouldn't have all of those parents helping me, I could never do my job. So you could see really how teaching and learning was not just the work of a single teacher or a single school. It was actually a social project of the community, and teachers actually were an active part of this. Very last point I want to make, I know my time is up, moving from standardization and compliance and conformity, now which you're very good at, to actually strengthening ingenuity. When we survey teachers, you know, to what extent do you believe that if you're more innovative in your work, you're going to be recognized for this? People will look to you as something positive. We see about a quarter of teachers saying yes to this, whereas three quarters of teachers perceive their school to be an innovation hostile environment. That's not necessarily the truth, but that's the perception of teachers. And if we cannot change that perception of teachers, it's going to be very hard to change anything. I know that challenges are tough. This is a very, very difficult agenda. Making teaching as easy to make it financially more attractive, and I think the Czech Republic is on a very good path with this. I've seen the data. I think that's something really working well, but I think the work to do to make teaching intellectually more attractive, to give teachers interesting careers, a work organization, an environment that really makes them, you know, like their job and be productive teachers. That's a long and hard road, but I'm really very privileged to be part of the discussion here, where you're on the way to achieve this. Thank you very much.
Rád bych jménem nás všech a samozřejmě také jménem...
On behalf of not only myself, but us all, I'd like to thank Andreas Schleicher for his presentation. I'm very happy that he has addressed the theme of the teaching profession against the backdrop of broad data about the teaching profession, so we could hear about... how other OECD member states do, and so we could see the comparison not only from the PISA but others. Before I give the floor to Professor Stech, I wanted to mention one thing. Well, there are three main characteristics, as stated in the PISA survey, three things that successful systems have in common. So it's compulsory internships, opportunities for further education, and a system of remuneration of teacher. I believe that this is a vital finding that we have to take into consideration when defining further priorities for teachers. That we, you know, this is something that has to be in our strategic thinking. However, now allow me to introduce Professor Stech. So he is known as an excellent university teacher. However, he is also a person who contributed to the drawing up of the education policy. And he is a person who can grab your attention, just like the presentation, the keynote delivered by Andreas Schleicher has. I would like to introduce Professor Cech very briefly. So he lectures at the Faculty of Education at Charles University. He dedicates his attention to pedagogical psychology. He is member of the expert group for the drawing up of the strategy of the education policy 2030 plus. He served as head of the Department of Psychology from 1993 for 70 years. He was active at universities in Paris and research institutes in Paris and Rome. In June 2011, the French government granted him the award of Officer of the French Order of Academic Palms. For long years, he served as prorector of Charles University. In his pedagogical research and publication activities for more than 30 years, he's been addressing the themes of teaching profession, relationship between the family and school, profession of the school psychology, school socialization. We're very happy that he represents the Czech Republic in OECD bodies and is a member of the Steering Committee for Education of UNESCO for the regional group of CEE countries. Professor Stech, the floor is yours, if you allow. Thank you. A very good morning to you, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished director, dear Andreas, Mr. Minister. It is very hard to deliver a presentation after Andreas Schleicher. You know, I know this for quite a long time already, for 10 or 15 years. So I guessed what genre.